Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Professional Learning for Teachers channel on Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay, and delighted to have on the show this evening Professor Brian Hudson, who's a Professor of Education and the Head of the School of Education and Social Work at the University of Sussex. And this evening, we're going to have a kind of keynote-style presentation from Professor Hudson on didactics and learning and teaching, and we're also going to be hearing about his work and the wider work of the World Education Research Association. So welcome to Radio EduTalk, Brian.
Thank you very much, David. I'm really pleased to be here.
And just over the next half an hour, 40 minutes or so, we'll be listening to Professor Hudson. And as ever, if you're listening to the live stream at edutalk.cc, you can get in touch with questions or comments at any time, and we'll include them in the live show. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, that's edutalkr. Or if you're on Twitter, you can use the hashtag edutalk, edutalk. And it might be worthwhile, whether you're listening to the live stream or the podcast, if you go to edutalk.cc and near the top of the page, or next to the archived audio of Professor Hudson's talk, there'll be a link, say, a short sentence just says, click here for key links. And if you click on the hyperlink, that'll open up a basic Word document, and it'll just have a reflective question that Professor Hudson's posed to listeners, as well as some links to his, for example, his bibliography and some key reading. So if you're listening to, as I say, the live show, the podcast, it might be an idea just to go to EduTalk website and open up that particular document. Also included in the document, which I think may be of great interest to people as we embark at early stages of tonight's show, would be to click on the link to Professor Hudson's slide share, and that's the presentation to which you'll be referring during tonight's show. So without further ado, Brian, it would be great if you could just briefly introduce yourself, and then we'll get right into tonight's topic of didactics and learning and teaching.
Okay, thank you very much, David. Well, just to begin, I started out as a secondary school teacher of mathematics for 15 years before I joined the Mathematics Education Centre, what was then the Mathematics Education Centre at Sheffield Hallam University. I did my PhD on group work with multimedia in the secondary maths classroom. That was back in 1995. And subsequently, I became Professor of Education at Sheffield Hallam. I left there in 2005 to work as Professor in Educational Work for ICT and Learning. That was in the Department of Interactive Media and Learning at Umeå University in Sweden. So I spent 4-5 years there before coming to Scotland in 2009, I joined the University of Dundee as Professor of Education, and then soon after that took on the role of Associate Dean for Research in the School of Education, Social Work and Community Education. I took up my present post, as David said, at the University of Sussex in November 2012, so I've just been here a year and a half. Currently, in terms of external work, I'm chair of the Teacher Education Policy in Europe Network, the TEPE Network, which has a conference coming up in Zagreb next weekend. And it's a successor network, really, to the Thematic Network for Teacher Education in Europe, TNTEE, which I'll refer to. I'll come back to that, but it's a bit part of the story, really. I'm also currently a council member and chair of the Publications Committee for the College of Teachers, associate editor of the Journal of Curriculum Studies. And I think the most significant thing here is that I've represented the Scottish Education Research Association, CERA, which I became involved with when I was at Dundee. I've been the rep of CERA on the Council of the World Education Research Association, WERA, since 2012. I've just handed over to George Head at the last meeting at the AERA conference a few weeks ago. So that's my background. What I'm proposing is to give a bit of background on the development of the World Education Research Association itself, my role on the council. I'll say something about the current, the forthcoming meeting, which is going to be in Edinburgh in November, and then get more into the content by talking about my involvement in the European Education Research Association era, and particularly the establishment of the Network on Didactics, Learning and Teaching, and how that's now being mirrored in WIRA. So I'll then move to, if you like, the content of the talk, which is my interest in didactics, learning and teaching.
That's fantastic, Brian. And I'll just say at this point, if anybody's having any difficulties with opening up the links, particularly the one to your slideshare presentation, that if you go to twitter.com/edutalker, you'll see the link to your presentation and the further links just there at that website. So that's twitter.com/edutalker.
Okay, great. Okay, David, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. On you go. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. So if I move to the World Education Research Association, WIRA was established in 2009. It was established as an association of national, regional and international research associations. Its aims are to advance education research as a scientific and scholarly field. And CIRA has been a member of the WIRA Association since 2009. I took on the role of link person with CIRA, for CIRA, back in 2012. A further development just in the last few months is that individual membership has just recently been introduced, so it is now possible to join as an individual member of WIRA. Most significant thing in terms of the context in Scotland is that as a result of my involvement on the council, the next WIRA focal meeting is going to be held in cooperation with CIRA and in collaboration with the CIRA annual conference. And that's going to be held at the University of Edinburgh 19th to the 21st of November. And if anybody is interested, the call for papers is still open. I think CIRA's call finishes at the end of the month. I think it's the 28th of May. So there are still possibilities to get involved in that conference. And I've put a link in the presentation to the WIRA website. Just stepping back a little bit, my involvement in WIRA in terms of, if you like, the academic content has built on my involvement in the European Education Research Association network, which was on focused on didactics, learning and teaching. And that grew out of the thematic network for teacher education in Europe. There was a network set up on didactics, and my interest, as with a background in maths education, was in subject didactics particularly. I think that was possibly the first network, thematic network, which was funded by the European Commission, and that was back in 1996. And I've listed some of the milestones in terms of the development of the network. I think one of the key milestones, interestingly, was in Edinburgh in September 2000 at the ESA conference, where I was a contributor to a curriculum symposium which had the title Didactique, an International Perspective. And I think that was probably the beginning of, if you like, the development of the wider idea, the idea of a wider network within ERA. I also wrote a journal paper which was published in the Journal of Curriculum Studies in 2002, which I've given a reference to. And much of what I've got to say in terms of the content of this talk you could see reflected in that paper. But as a result of those initiatives and discussions that took place in the next few years, Network 27 on Didactics, Learning and Teaching was established at the ESA conference in Geneva, which was held in 2006. And I led that until 2012. So moving on to WIRA, a call was made for international research networks. A number of calls have been made, but a call was made in the autumn of last year, which we agreed as a network we were interested in applying for. And that was a call for the establishment of WIRA International Research Networks. So we applied. I applied on behalf of the network, and we were successful with the application to establish an international research network on didactics, learning and teaching. And again, I've given a link in the presentation to the website for the didactics IRN. Initial participants include members from Sweden, Ghana, Brazil, Canada, France, Mexico, South Korea, Switzerland, Germany, Niger, Benin, Thailand, Japan, UK, and the United States. So we've gone to widen it as a global network. And one of the aims, the long-term aims over the next 3 years, is to produce a synthesis report on research in this field at an international level. The other sort of things I can report in relation to this is we have a research workshop accepted at the ESA conference, which will be held in Porto in the first week of September, but we're planning to hold a similar event in Edinburgh at the WIRA focal meeting in November. So anybody that was interested or is interested, there'll be a possibility of becoming involved in that. In terms of my interests, specifically in terms of, if you like, academic content, I'll move on to that now. And I'll structure it around two key questions, really. First of which is, what has the study of didactics offered me in terms of the development of my own research, my own theories, my own practice? And what key issues have emerged from what I would describe as a search to derive meaning from this tradition in a way that makes sense to my own experience and practice? And as I say, as I said earlier, the paper is structured in a similar way to the way in which I'm structuring this talk. But the key issues for me that arose in terms of studying the differences between, if you like, the curriculum tradition in which I was steeped and took as my sort of basic starting point, and looking at a different way of thinking about teaching and learning, the tradition of didactics, the key issues for me emerged around differences in relation to meaning-making and intentionality in relation to teaching and learning, and to education in general, I think. Recognising and holding the complexity associated with teaching and learning processes, an issue arose about where we focus attention, particularly if we're observing teaching and learning processes and we're researching these processes. It gave me a toolbox, in a way, for holding that complexity associated with teaching and learning. And it also raised some distinctive differences with regard to the role of the teacher, which I'll come to. So if I come to the first one, first issue first, meaning-making and intentionality, I've taken a quote from someone called Wolfgang Klafke, whose work he would be described as the tradition of critical constructive didactic. And he writes, I'll read it out. If we adopt the term didactic as the subsumption of all the mental effort directed at aspects of content, at the what of instruction and education, in German, Allgemein Bildung, as distinguished from the how, a topic of a theory of teaching and learning methods, which is referred to as methodique. The first task of a teacher engaged in preparation can be termed didactic analysis. And this relates to a concept which is very difficult to translate, but the notion of Bildung is a term that's used throughout German-speaking world in relation to education. But very hard to translate, as I say, but can be seen as a state of being that might be characterized by a cluster of attributes, such as becoming educated, knowledgeable, learned, literary, scholarly, wise, etc. But the notion of Allgemeinbildung is seen as a more sort of practical aspect of this. Klafke describes it as the competence for a productive coping with life with regard to coexistence and survival. It includes life in society and basic communicative and technical abilities and values. And I think I see a parallel here, and I'll offer some perspectives, having worked in England, Scotland, and Scandinavia. And I see a parallel here with the purpose of Curriculum for Excellence in Scotland, in particular the four capacities to enable each child or young person to be a successful learner, confident individual, a responsible citizen and an effective contributor. And Clafgear goes on, and he offers five questions around which to think when preparing for teaching. And he describes this, he offers the view that preparation for teaching is not a technical issue, but rather a deeply interpretive issue, a pedagogical interpretation. And his questions are quite widely used and discussed and are part of the language of preparation for teaching in the German education system, in my experience. And his first one, the first question he raises is, what wider or general sense of reality do these contents exemplify and open up for the learner? What basic phenomenon or fundamental principle, what law, criterion, problem, method, technique or attitude can be grasped by dealing with the particular, this content as an example? What his second question is, what significance does the content in question or the experience, knowledge, ability or skill to be acquired through this topic already possessed in the minds of the children in my class? So he's looking at the present sort of situation for those young people. What significance should it have from a pedagogical point of view? And then the third question is, what constitutes the topic's significance for the children's future? So really looking to the past in the first question, the present in the second, and the future in the third. And then comes a question about structure. How is the content to be structured, which are being placed into a specifically pedagogical perspective by the first three questions? And then his fifth question is related to examples and special cases. What are the special cases, the phenomena, situations, experiments, persons, elements of aesthetic experience, and so forth, in terms of which the structure of the content in question can become interesting, stimulating, approachable, conceivable, or vivid for the children of the stage of development in this class? So what those questions are highlighting for me is, if you like, a systematic approach to those what, why, and how questions, which are central to this process of didactic analysis. The second issue which I've highlighted is, I've described it as recognising and holding the complexity of the teaching and learning process. And I think it's interesting here to consider how learning and teaching can be translated across different languages. I think I came to notice this especially, I think, after listening to Jean Lave and to reading one of her papers entitled Teaching as Learning in Practice. And in terms of trying to translate teaching or learning, one of the things that I encountered was that in some languages, there isn't such a clear distinction as we make in English between teaching and learning, as if they're very different. So in Russian, the notion, the word obucheni, actually is best translated as teaching learning. Similar phenomenon exists in relation to Unterricht, Fach in German. And the most interesting example I came across was the word opetus, which is the Finnish version. And in fact, this is a triple complex word, which is best translated as teaching, studying, learning. And that aspect of studying is something that I'll come back to. You can see a similar phenomenon if we look at the Chinese word for Chinese symbol for learning, which is made up of two characters. The first character represents the idea of studying, so it means to study, and there are two symbols making up that character. The upper symbol representing the accumulation of knowledge over the lower symbol, which is a doorway. And the second character is about practicing constantly, and that represents a bird flying over a symbol of youth. So the combination is this idea of to study and to practice constantly. So for me, that it's through that recognizing of the complexity of the process of learning that particular attention is given to the studying aspects of that process. So if you like, those key functions that need to be fulfilled in order to achieve the goal or end point of the process, which might be interpreted as a state of learning. I've quoted Kanson and Murray in one of my papers, who talk about it as being the invisible aspects of the process. Moving on to the tools for holding complexity, one of the classic tools is what would be described as the didactic triangle, or the didactic triad. And for those that don't have access to the slides, I've presented a slide in which I'm simply presenting a triangle. The top vertex represents the content, is labelled content. The left-hand lower vertex, the teacher, and the right-hand lower vertex, the student. And it's simply a way or a device, simple device, for highlighting the relations that exist between the teacher, student, and the content, and a way of trying to think about the complexity of it. And the intention is that it should be treated as a whole, although it's almost impossible to hold the three aspects in practice. And the most common approach is to take the pedagogical relation, which is the relation between the teacher and student, as the starting point. But in considering the content in relation to the teacher, then the teacher's, if you like, subject competence comes into the picture. And it's also worth emphasizing that teaching itself doesn't necessarily imply learning. So the most appropriate term for the activities of the students would come back to this idea of studying. And it's through that studying of the instructional process that we can observe the activity, whilst the invisible part, as Kanson and Murray refer to, may be learning. But the key aspect of the teacher here is seen to be guiding that relation. And that's where, for me, the complexity comes in. So what we've got is the teacher's role, which is the didactical relation, or the didactic relation, is actually a relation to another relation. So the teacher is guiding the relation of the student to the content. So there's a direct relation between the teacher and student, which is the pedagogical relation. But the teacher's key role is in guiding the relation of the student to the content. And this raises the question about, you know, how we conceive of the role of the teacher. Is it about professional judgment? Can it be reduced to technical rules? And in view of the complexity of that aspect, it's difficult to think that the didactic relation could be organised universally or according to some set of technical rules. And so a consequence of that is that teachers' own practical theories and pedagogical thinking are seen to be of vital importance. So that's a central issue for me. And that then, from that flow, a number of other related issues. I think it opens up the whole area of pedagogical content knowledge, mathematical knowledge for teaching. And I think the thing here to emphasize is that pedagogical content knowledge is not necessarily the same as content knowledge. So being a good mathematician, for example, does not necessarily make you a good maths teacher. Just as an example of that, pedagogical content knowledge is seen as a knowledge which intertwines content and pedagogy. So it's about the knowledge related to this relationship between content and pedagogy. And a couple of researchers, Deborah Ball and Bass, have talked about the pedagogical content knowledge of a maths teacher involving this capability to decompress, decompression as an ability to deconstruct one's own mathematical knowledge into a less polished and final form, which the elemental components are accessible and visible. And we can contrast that with the idea of compression and abstraction, which is central to the discipline of maths, and particularly at higher levels. So, in fact, the abilities in terms of becoming an effective teacher are in some ways working in an opposite direction to those that enable people to become mathematicians. So there's no, and these things don't necessarily correlate without good teacher education, for example. Another idea that I've drawn on from the field of didactics is this idea of didactic transposition. And I'm drawing on here the work of Bernard Schneuerli at the University of Geneva, who's written about this. And he talks about, in the school context, that the knowledge that is being dealt with is not knowledge for acting and solving problems in the social context in which it was created and where it is to be used, but instead is transposed into knowledge to be taught and to be learned. So this concept of didactic transposition is based on what he describes as a rupture between daily life and school, which changes the knowledge profoundly. So there's an issue here about what is mathematics, what is school mathematics, what is the discipline of mathematics itself. And if we continue with the example of mathematics again, I think we're faced with big questions about the nature of mathematics. Is it transposed into some extreme form of mathematical formalism, or a more liberating form of what I've written about and others have written about, a form of mathematical fallibilism? But just to summarise what I'm talking about here is, there is a danger that what becomes emphasised through and reinforced through very high stakes testing is a view of mathematics as being about rules and procedures, strict procedures and strict rules. It becomes irrefutable and certain. It becomes dogmatic and absolutist. Whereas an alternative view of mathematics, which we've written about and described as a fallibilist view, is about critical thinking, it's about growth and change, it's about dealing with things that are refutable and uncertain, involving multiple solutions and creative reasoning. It's about learning from errors and mistakes and supported by evaluation and self-assessment. As a result, it offers possibilities for engagement, enjoyment even, in terms of doing mathematics and fulfillment. So seen as a creative human activity in contrast to something which induces fear and anxiety. And I've written about that more recently in some of the work arising from the maths project, which I led while I was at the University of Dundee on developing mathematical thinking. I'm happy to talk further about that. But just moving on from there to the role of the teacher, I think what we have is a dominant discourse in terms of curriculum, which is reflecting what I describe as a managerial framework of curriculum technologies, where the teacher is seen as an invisible agent of the system, animated and directed by the system, major brake on innovation, reform and change. Whereas the tradition of didactics offers a view of the teacher at the heart of the teaching, studying, learning process. Teachers then become the sources of animation for the system, and teachers' practices as the source of innovation, reform and change. So for me, it offers a way of thinking about teaching and learning and the role of the teacher, which places the teacher at the heart of that process. And for thinking about the most basic how, what and why questions about teachers' work. And I think that follows from the emphasis that's placed upon didactic analysis and the relative professional autonomy of the teacher within that tradition. And I think it's interesting to look at that tradition and again, to compare with the situation in Scotland, because in that didactic transition tradition, teachers are licensed as self-determining professionals who work within a larger institutional framework that directs but does not control the details of the work. As in the case of lawyers and engineers, the work of teachers is based on an expectation of autonomy of practice and a system of self-discipline and peer review rather than external control. And I would say that, I see a very strong parallel with the developments in Scotland around the establishment and the strengthening and building of the General Teaching Council of Scotland. I think that is a real contrast with the current situation working here in England. Final reflection is I've offered a quote from Kunsley here, who writes, "The didactica does not begin by asking how a student learns or what a student should be able to do or know. Rather, he or she first looks at a prospective object of learning in terms of building to ask what it can and should signify to the student and how students themselves can experience this significance." So I think for me, didactical thinking offers an alternative to the dominant discourse that surrounds discussions about education policy, which I typify as a worldview that sees the social and cultural world as an objective structure. And the task of the curriculum is simply to present that structure to students. And it's based on an assumption that culture and society can be reduced to be simply to be facts to be learned. In contrast, within the didactic tradition, the social and cultural world is subjectified. It is seen that there are things to be learned, but students are encouraged to find their own path. I've offered a few references, and I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian. That's absolutely fascinating. And I appreciate we're just coming into the last couple of minutes of tonight's show. So I will just say for those who are listening to the live show, or indeed the podcast, because if you've got any questions or comments, you know, we can gather them and pass them on to Brian later on. So two ways to get in touch. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, and you can also use the hashtag edutalk on Twitter. A couple of questions from me, Brian. Can you say a bit more about, you've engaged a lot with the kind of Scottish policy context in recent years. I've seen that for myself. I mean, you're talking about kind of managerialism within education, and we have the new suite of standards, for example, and people are talking about PRD and more of a kind of close eye on what's actually going on with individual teachers, their practice, actually what's happening within the classroom. So do you think these are conducive to a kind of didactic approach, or does it kind of fight against it? Does it make things too, do we go down the technical route too much in it with these kind of developments?
I don't think necessarily it means a technical route. I suppose it all depends on how, in practice, it's how it's put into practice and the frameworks and the, I suppose the controls or the, you know, where does the control lie? Is the control with the individual teacher, or is the control sort of existing outside? And so, in and of itself, I think. I think any kind of appraisal process can be either very liberating or can be quite the opposite. So I think the same applies to any PRD process that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I would guess that maybe the didactic tradition is alive and well within, you know, mathematical circles or mathematics teacher circles. Is it something that's regularly discussed and you know, across the board or in certain pockets of networks, or is this something that you're keen to see you know, making a comeback? I mean, a lot, some of the references and the quotes that you gave, you know, maybe were from 10-15 years ago. So is it still currently being discussed, are the ideas being taken forward within academia?
Yes, I mean, I can give you more up-to-date references. I published a book 2011 or 12, I think it was, with Minor Mayer, Beyond Fragmentation, Didactics, Learning and Teaching in Europe. And that really sort of reflects the work of the Didactics Network between 2006 and 2012. And that's become quite well used text. I've been invited to speak at University of Örebro and Oslo University College in the last few months to groups of doctoral students for whom it's become a sort of a key reader. And there is, I think, the fact that the WIRA network has been established does reflect a growing interest. I think the ERA network has contributed to that. There's growing interest across the world. I have been invited to write a chapter on didactics for the SAGE handbook on curriculum assessment, curriculum pedagogy and assessment, which will be published next year, and another book published by colleagues at Hong Kong Institute of Education around a comparison between European and Chinese didactics. So I think it's a growing field. There's a growing interest, and I think there is a search. I would say this is not subject specific. There are a group of people who are interested in working interdisciplinary across subjects. Quite a few of the people that I'm working with at the moment from France are originally from within the maths education community, but have chosen to work in sort of a general grouping, which is not about general didactics, but it's about I suppose, a search for what's general across different subject didactics. So I'd say that the interest is growing, actually.
And with this growing interest, how are you and others going about, it being discussed among undergraduates, teaching students, and as well as classroom practitioners?
I think there's a good case there for something that is distilled from the work that we've been doing that becomes more accessible. But the book that we published, Beyond Fragmentation, I think could be used in undergraduate courses. It's attracting a lot of interest at the moment in terms of doctoral level, but it could easily be a reader for undergraduate level work. I think it's about building the interest, really. As I say, I'm often the minority in a sort of a European context, perhaps one or two of us from the English speaking world, but hopefully that will continue to that will start to build. We have a small group of colleagues in the UK who are actively involved in the ERA network and wanting to contribute to the WIRA network as well.
And just to finish up, Brian, can you just give us the details of that text again, and then of the WIRA IRN that's going to be held at CIRA later on this year?
Yes, we've got to submit the proposal for the WIRA IRN, but what I'm imagining it will be a workshop, a research workshop. We're interested in, once we get the go-ahead, in inviting sort of short presentations and gathering ideas and good examples of work in progress. And the book that I referred to is a book, it's entitled Beyond Fragmentation, Didactics, Learning and Teaching in Europe. It's edited by myself and Meinert Meyer, and it's published by Barbara Budrick Publishers.
Brian, thank you so much for giving up your valuable time to appear on Radio EduTalk this evening, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you.